rub a lamp while saying that. Yeah. Was it sort of rubbing well, and open the genie come out?
Free wash machines.
Well, potentially. I mean, that would be great.
Love a good white good.
Well, why not?
Owen, if you had an outside sponsor, I think it would be like granola bar, like Cliff Bar. Or something like
Cliff
that.
Bar. Oh, yeah, I'd go for that.
Welcome to the Global Mountain Bike Show. This week, I think we've got some very exciting news that could change all the bikes we ride.
Yeah.
We are talking about money that seems to be flowing back into mountain biking. That'd be good for all of us, probably. And also talking about pro trends. In fact, the one at the moment, there's a $5 trend that the pros can't get enough of.
It's not $5, it's much more than that.
It's like, it should be $5.
Is it?
Pro trends that have come and gone over the years. I'm joined this week by Owen. You're a bike nerd, so that's handy because we're going to talk about bike nerdy things.
Which is good.
And Rich.
Hello.
Rich, you've got experience. We're getting into gearboxes first. I know we've done this probably a few times, but I think there's really big news this week. And you've ridden gearboxes.
I have.
As have I. So we'll get into it. So it's Eurobike week. Owen, in your world, this is sort of Christmas. It's the biggest bike trade, or one of the biggest bike trade shows in the world.
It's huge. Yeah,
and so
massive.
We're getting teased things. It starts tomorrow. So we'll be able to see things IRL from tomorrow.
Exactly.
Did you say IRL?
Yeah, that's what the kids say.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
But for now, we are seeing some pretty exciting press releases, if that's not an oxymoron.
I don't think it is, because normally press releases, even the very nicest ones that are written, are of a product that might be new, but you've kind of been able to read between the lines that this is coming. Whereas these two press releases that I think you're going to talk about are humongous, and the fact that no hints, no teases before, and then you're like, whoa.
Normally we get to hear a little bit ahead of time. This time this was news to us. So on the Commensal Instagram, they showed off a silhouette of what they call a Meta SX concept. You can go and see at Eurobike, and it's got an Avinox MG motor concept. And also, so that was pretty exciting. But then when I got this other one from Canyon saying they also have a long travel prototype e-mountain bike equipped with an Avinox MG concept motor. And if you zoom in on the Commensal one, it is motor gearbox, presumably MG.
Yeah.
And this is big news. You know, I rode a gearbox bike a couple of weeks ago and a motor gearbox bike as well. So a bit of a mountain bike and e-mountain bike versions of the same thing. And it did actually really, really impress me. And at the time I said, imagine if someone like Avinox did this. And that was less than 2 weeks ago. And here we are, Rich. What do you think about someone like Avinox showing up with a motor gearbox?
They're the cat amongst the pigeons. That's the saying, isn't it? When it's come to the e-bike world in general.
Yeah.
Now, gearboxes, I mean, I think are like the holy grail if you can get them right. And Pinion are doing a very good job with theirs, which you've obviously just been riding and finding out about.
Which is why I would say gravity riders get a bit hot on the collar when we talk about gearboxes, because we know the potential's there.
Yeah, exactly.
But no one's really, I'm talking about bikes as well. The companies haven't quite, although at World Cup Downhill we're seeing quite a few gearbox bikes.
Well, so much so that it's $100,000 up for winning.
First person to win on a belt drive bike. But as for regular mountain bikes, they're still like a unicorn, really. I've not seen many out on the trail.
I think they are. They've always been that kind of like tease thing that was going to be over the horizon, like nuclear fusion, correct me where I'm wrong, where it was like going to change everything. We can harness the power of the sun. But that hasn't ever happened. It's always like 10 years away. And it feels like that in a similar way with gearboxes, like they've been teased and, we've got a roll-off rear hub and that could be great. We could do that. And then we've had experiments of like mid hub gear bikes from Nikolai and lots of others, and I guess Zeroed as well early on. And now we've got a gearbox, but it hasn't quite yet.
Yeah. And so what I mean, sorry, Neil, like the thing is that gearboxes generally work on more gravity orientated bikes, right? Yeah. They're heavier, there's a bit of drag to them, they're not as quite as efficient in theory. So I first rode one back in 2019. I did my full EWS season on a Deviate Guide, it was. Pinion gearbox.
Oh, yeah.
Chain driven with a grip shifter.
Yeah.
The biggest problem was, one, it was heavy. Secondly, it was quite draggy. And third, I actually had to, at the time, and I think they've come on a long way since this, but you had to back off the power a touch to be able to change gear. So essentially, like, disengage your gears, slot it into the next one and crack on, which when you're sprinting is a bit poo.
So I rode the Nikolai bike with the latest pinion, was it 1.12 or something? I can't remember the name. But with the electronic shifter, and that was really good. And I probably overblown in my mind, I thought this could be really heavy, really inefficient. It didn't feel like it, either of those things when I rode it. In fact, it felt amazing. The suspension felt brilliant and it was absolutely silent. I was listening to my tyres and my fork on the trail.
Really?
And it was like a whole new experience for me.
Yeah.
And I rode the MGU and thought this is like a magic carpet and it just makes complete sense. You got the belt, which makes no noise. You never have to oil it.
No, like nothing,
just,
is it?
Nothing.
So all those negatives I kind of just listed off are like eradicated by having a motor,
and I'm
as
getting,
in an e-bike.
Well, yeah, and
they are
getting particularly. I think it's particularly exciting because you know Avanox. We have talked the last couple of years about Avanox so much over on EMBN because it came from DJI, which is a brand that we all probably know quite a lot about. Not everyone does, but you know the camera kit and the drones and all that stuff that we use here is amazing. So when we heard DJI were going to bring out a motor, that was very exciting, and it has delivered. It's small, it's lightweight, it's powerful. The ecosystem just works really well. Hence why a couple of weeks ago I said, well, imagine a world where Avanox made one of these things and we're just about to see it.
Sort of rubber lamp while saying that, yeah. Was it? Sort of rubber, well, open a genie come out.
Manifesting, yeah, aren't you?
Like, yeah. I'd sort of got some vibes. You know, we sign these NDAs for some of the companies we work with. And I sort of got a vibe from someone that more motor gearboxes were coming, but no one said who or why or when. And we still don't know when, because on both of these press releases, it does say concept. So, however, when there's one press release, I thought that's interesting. When there's two and there's, you know, multiple brands doing it, you've got to think it's somewhere close.
Right,
to,
and big brands as well, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's not like some sort of obscure out of the way thing.
You know, it's not easy to build a frame, even if you 3D print, you've got to design this thing to show this thing off. So these bikes might not be rideable. We don't know anything yet. But I think it is, you know, and I think, you know, we'll never have a gearbox cross-country bike. I don't think that world exists, never exist.
Because I think that's something that e-bike has enabled is the talks of longer travel. Because Zero had been doing gearbox bikes and DVX had been doing gearbox bikes for a while. So they've been out there, but they've always been in the longer travel sort of format because the advantages work not so much for the longer climbing that you were doing in enduro stuff, but for reliability and for descending, the mass doesn't matter as much. And then with e-bikes, it feels like it's enabled the concept to work with loads more different formats because for ages we've been weight weenies and we've worried about it. Whereas now, because we've got the extra assistance and we've understood that weight doesn't maybe matter quite as much.
Yeah, I think the downhills and even enduro rides are showing that it doesn't matter as much as maybe we once thought.
I would always choose reliability and strength
that's
over...
That's what you do get in spades.
I think that's worth its weight in gold, to be honest.
I guess any of this new technology, you'd always sort of expect it to be expensive when it comes out. You know, suspension forks were the same when we first got them and they were a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
Carbon bikes, you know, now all, you know, your entry level version of all those things is much better than when they first came out and much, much cheaper. However, Avanox, you know, their partner brand Amflow have set a new bar for good value e-mountain bikes. Yeah. So I'd be on the hopeful side of the fence that this wouldn't be a crazy price tag on this, but we're doing a lot of speculating here, but that's one.
there is
one of the pivots on the gearbox thing is that yes, they are more expensive because I kind of went to see Gates last year, and it's really fun chatting to them because they're really like passionate about it. Like Priority Bikes are kind of one of their partners, they do lots of gearbox bikes, and yes, there is more outlay, but then all the expensive bits that wear out are sealed in a weatherproof box.
I was about to say that, yeah.
So yeah, there is more outlay, but you're not replacing chains, cassettes, chain rings and bottom brackets and other stuff. It's not to say that there isn't maintenance, there is, but I think is it...
10,000 miles?
Oh, I think it's 10,000 kilometres.
I never looked inside, Mike. When I had it, didn't touch it all season.
Yeah, 10,000 kilometres, it's big numbers,
That's a lot.
So, I mean, we're going to be looking at these. Steve's going to be there to see them. IRL, you know what that stands for? In real life. This week, Steve's taking a look and filming. So we'll know a lot more very soon, hopefully. Because, at the moment, we don't know that much. But it's enough to get me excited.
And me.
Next up, we're going into money. in mountain biking.
Ooh.
Which is, I mean, starting off with a bit of racing, I suppose, but we'll talk broadly about mountain biking. You know, outside sponsorship within racing brings...
Wow.
What you need for that is eyeballs. You know, the measure of a sport being mainstream is looking, obviously, if you go to football, you've got car companies, you've got drug companies, you've got oil companies, all the biggest brands are there, obviously, because everyone watches it. And Orbea team have just announced that they've got a partnership with Subaru, which got me thinking back to the golden days of mountain bike racing when we had Diesel, Cannondale, Grundig, all these things we've talked about before. So is it a sign of good health within particularly mountain bike racing? Because when Warner Brothers took over, they said this is one of the things they want to deliver. It's more eyeballs means more outside money, not just brands selling bikes to pay riders. Yeah. They want to bring in money.
Well, look at NASCAR. NASCAR's huge. It's an amazing sport in terms of there's tactics, there's loads of racing. Essentially, the cars are kind of stock-ish. There's lots of limits.
About NASCAR.
Oh, right.
So they have,
I've
like...
I've seen Talladega Nights.
Wild, sponsored by, like, donut companies, things like that.
They have, non-endemic partners everywhere, and it's incredible. And I think that's the thing that mountain biking hasn't been that good at. We've had moments where we were better.
Yeah.
And I think it's this weird thing of kind of like, oh, mountain biking's ours. And it's like, no, we want broad appeal. We want, like, a washing machine company to sponsor us because, A, it's not just we get big money. It means that
free
our
washing
brand,
machines.
Well, potentially. I mean, that would be great.
Love a good white good.
Well, why not? No, but I'm just, like, everyone who uses
a
white good,
don't
we?
Mean.
It's kind of like Grundig sponsored it way, way, way back. So that was the World Cup title sponsor, and Grundig make white goods. And there's a white goods sponsor for cyclocross. And it's this thing, we all use it. We all use white goods, but so do, like,
we focus
loads of other people, not in mountain biking. So if it means that we also have crossover of more people who are using white goods, also use mountain bikes. That's my get around.
We've had also, I thought, Chris Kyle and David Godziak do, like, Prada things. I don't know what you call them. Like,
just collaborations,
isn't
it?
So, like, do you remember the train that was painted with the Prada stripe? And then Chris Kyle was wearing some dapper gear, wasn't he?
But that was for sale too. So it was an interesting collab because it was like a brand elevation to move it into the mountain bike space. But then also you could head out and buy a Prada mountain bike extreme kit. I balked a little bit of the pricing. Bit above my normal
price range.
You got
close enough to look
range.
At the pricing. You must have been somewhat interested.
Yeah, more money in mountain biking right here. Do you think, though, that they're aiming specifically at mountain biking, or they're using those kind of athletes to just broaden their appeal in general?
Yeah, I guess it's almost
the
same
on the
thing,
Prada front.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think with Prada, it is like it's sort of like skiing, other extreme sports.
Yeah,
it's
cool
a brand
kids,
elevation.
Right? Yeah.
Whereas the Subaru or Bayer thing, I think there's lots of synergies between the businesses.
You can see it, can't you? I can see that.
But Subaru,
I'd love a 555 paint, like, liveried up.
Oh, I was thinking, what model's that?
Yeah. What even is 555? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Cigarette
cool.
brand.
Was it cigarettes? I didn't even know.
Yeah.
You could argue that even Red Bull is sort of an outside, because they sell fizzy pop. They don't sell bike stuff. You know, they don't sell any extreme sport stuff.
Well, same as Monster.
And they have helped. Their money has really helped mountain biking. Obviously, that's quite a complex subject when you talk about coverage and all that stuff. But still, they do sponsor a lot of riders. They support it.
I mean, I think there is proof of this. So since sort of the Warner Brothers takeover, we have seen it from almost the very beginning. So the Rock Rider cross country team are now Ford Rock Rider, and I think that's just Ford France as well.
No,
it's not
so
Ford Global.
It started as Ford.
Is it Ford France and then became Global?
And now it's Ford Global.
Okay, well, I suppose that there is proof in itself, right? That Ford France, huge company in itself, obviously, or arm of the company, showed enough interest or thought that there was enough in it. It worked because they did quite well.
For me, it's a good thing of like, not because I'm a big Ford fan, but it's more that non-endemic's coming back, and in the glory years of mountain biking, which we often talk about, get a bit misty-eyed and, wasn't it great then? There was lots of problems with it. It wasn't all perfect, but like Subaru sponsored Specialized team with Palmer.
Which
is iconic. Then there was another big car company that sponsored a little sort of American team that was huge as well. Volvo Cannondale.
Yes, yeah. That was massive. And the money.
Huge.
Owen, if you had an outside sponsor, I think it would be like granola bar, like Cliff Bar.
Cliff Bar. Oh, yeah, I'd go for that. Yeah.
Rich, I think it'd be something like DeWalt.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah.
What would you suggest for me for a big outside sponsor to really make my day?
Tamiya?
What?
Tamiya.
Yes, that word actually, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, that is actually
nerdy
a good one.
Nerdy Japanese RC cars.
Yeah, I think we'd all take them, wouldn't we? Yeah. We'd all have that, I think.
Right, now talking about pro trends, arguably some of these are gimmicks that have come and some have stayed, some have faded away. At the moment, there's a sort of catnip within the downhill World Cup of these bar ends. Even those two words put together make me shudder a little bit, but these are bar ends
that are
basically a disc of plastic you could make for arguably less than $5. Yep. But Joe Breeden has come in and he's helped design these things. So basically, it's like a bumper to stop your hand falling off the end of the bar. And they went from probably half a dozen people to now, it seems like almost everyone on the World Cup downhill circuit has to have them. And they're few and far between, apparently. You have to go around stealing them from other racers' bars.
Wow.
Well, maybe not, but what do we think about these trends? Particularly that one. Let's start with that one, Owen. A bit of plastic.
Yeah. I mean, it did start...
Excuse me.
I mean, they did literally start as a bit of plastic on the end. Joe is an interesting guy. He could have been a pro soccer footballer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's super keen into it and then found mountain biking. He's kind of overcome adversity and some really bad injuries, like a random one on a photo shoot, but he just tried to do a manual lander or something. He went terribly wrong. But
don't let that give you bias for these bar ends.
And I've also had to fix pedals for him in the past. He is a really nice guy, great hair. But I think some of the things whereby racers need things to help with their... There's a jazzy word, proprioception. Just means where your body knows where the bits of your body are. So, and I think with arm pump, Joe's really struggled with it. And I've worked with other racers in the past that have really struggled with arm pump. And there's methods that I think some motocrossers use and other techniques to just sort of solve that problem. But Joe has decided that these little plastic guards on the end, they've then been developed by another brand and now they are a bit more of a bar end. Yeah, and they are a thing.
Yeah.
So I guess the original question was, do they work and what do I think of them? I mean, if they work for Joe, great. Will they work for everybody? I'll be really honest. I don't think they will.
I am joking about it a bit. I sort of agree. If you can relax a bit your grip, that will probably help some people. And, it, these people are using them, so they must believe in them. They're not just getting paid to stick them on, that's for sure.
That's the key, though, is that if they work for them, I think we've seen it. I don't think these are... I do think there is something to them. I don't think they're like... In the past, we've seen magic silicone bracelets.
Yeah.
Not from team riders, but ones with a hologram that was programmed. And it was meant to kind of like rebalance energy around you or something like this. They were huge. And it wasn't just in mountain biking. They were over all sports. They were humongous. And then effectively in Australia, somebody kind of took them to court because it's like... They don't really do anything
picking up
apart
bad
from
juju off you, Owen, about these things.
Right. I'm going to call bull.
Oh.
Wow.
I think because they are working for someone, that's great. If they work for Joe, perfect. The problem with high-end racers, people at the very top, is if they see someone doing something, they're almost paranoid if they're not doing it.
Yeah.
So they jump on the bandwagon. Now, I'm not to say that's not working for some of the others as well, but they're like... Well, he's doing all right, and he's running this.
Yes. We've seen
they're
that
running
with,
that.
High bars and things.
Yeah,
it's not the first.
Wide bars, long, low, and slack. We all jump on these trends. So I'm calling it there that, like, actually, for some, it may well work, but it's almost a fear of missing out.
Maybe not at World Cup downhill, but I would worry about them snagging on bushes for my riding. They'd probably grab on something as I.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not likely at a World Cup downhill, is it? But. Yeah. Are the trends we've seen come and go?
Well, you touched on long, low and slack.
Yes.
But we'll come to that one. I remember back before then, like we had, you had to have a brace on your handlebar because riser bars were kind of new.
Yeah.
So you had to have a little brace
on X-Lights, Club Roosts.
Club
Roosts. Exactly.
Yeah.
I
was
the Sonic.
Is that just because they weren't very strong though?
I bent a set of Club Roost bars, even with brace.
Maybe. I've still got a set. They're fine. Not a problem. 550, nice and wide. Then we saw like monster saddles. So quite a few brands had these humongous padded saddles.
Did you ever try one?
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, no.
It was unrideable. I had the SDG big boy. Just could not.
I had one of those really long Tioga ones.
Yes, I had one of those. Like Snoopy's nose one. Or the Vulgar's one. Snoopy nose one. Yeah. But it then kind of keeps going. And I think it was Scott had the FX DH Octane, which had two seat posts.
Yes, it
because
did.
The saddle was like a moto one.
But then I don't think anyone actually raced on them. I think
someone would have had to.
Because I remember Johan Engstrom, and the bike was actually amazing, but not with that thing on it. I'm pretty sure they didn't use that exact bike.
But I think it's that thing of there's been lots of little trends like that bubble up. Especially in the downhill world, where it is this confidence of like, oh, wait, that rider's running that. I'm going to run that as well.
Sometimes they settle back and we all sort of benefit. Like plus tyres, I would argue that 27.5 and 29 plus was a thing. And actually, we've all seemed to have settled on a bit wider tyres.
Just 2.5, 2.6 as well.
Yeah.
Agreed. But I mean, the long, low and slack thing, like I touched on, we said, is a prime example. We went mental with it, didn't we? Over a period of time, we all went mad with just making, or bike companies went mad with making bikes as like super duper long, really like slack and low. Poly were a great example. They went to the extreme. Geometron did a bit as well. A few others out there. And then we're like, actually not that good.
I mean, you do need to push the limits a bit.
I agree, and that's fine, isn't it? But
I think it's a fun one where the trends kind of like balance between progression and like a technological thing, and then there is the magic woo-woo mystic.
There's those stickers. You remember those little metal sticker things that were on?
They're still a thing.
Yeah.
Well, look, you've got steering dampers, tune mass dampers, that weird-ass fairing thing that Reese Wilson and a couple of them have been spotted running under their seats and stuff.
Oval chainrings, they still around?
Yeah, yes, they are. Oh, right. They could be a big advantage.
They are. You don't see them that often.
How'd you get an oval gearbox?
Crash it.
So I do remember at a handmade bike show, someone had got an oval chainring set up on a single speed, and I was just like, how does that even work?
With a chain tensioner though.
No chain tensioner. But because the chain was symmetrical, it still blows my mind. I'm like, what? But also there's like slack points and high points, so it was fine. But it was still mind blowing. There you go. Is that going to be the next trend though? More bar ends.
Oval single speeds.
Yeah, maybe.
I hope not.
Oh.
I kind of, you know, I like seeing it. I obviously I'm a bit, I don't buy everything that comes out, but it's good to see innovation.
And the tech side.
I think, you know, in a year's time, we'll see if people are still running these things. Then we know it. Like, I think it is working for some people.
Yeah.
All right, jump into the comments if you want to put in your 2p about what we've talked about today. And obviously, stick tuned to GMBN Tech and EMBN because Steve Jones is at Eurobike, so we'll get to see what has been shown off this week.